Sports, politics, life. B-Stock Electronics Outlet Store presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at bstock.net.
Impossible, unmistakable, insanity by the Kansas City Royals, who are officially white hot at this point. The Royals just bombed the Houston Astros on Wednesday night, 11-2, your final. Kansas City just lit up the scoreboard. All nine starters in the lineup scored a run. This is the third time already this year the Royals have scored 10 runs or more. They get another quality start, this time from Seth Lugo, six innings pitch and two earned runs. The Royals are now 8-4. They've won six in a row. The bullpen has gone 19 scoreless innings. And I can't get over the night Vinny Pasquantino had. He finally kind of got off the schneid. He's off to a rough start. He had four RBIs and a home run. A beautiful night for Vinny Pasquantino. The Pasquatch and the Royals just roll along. They will take the Astros on Thursday afternoon at Kauffman Stadium with the starting pitcher who's been best so far this year, Brady Singer, gets the call at the K Thursday afternoon. This is getting fun. There are so many things the Royals are doing that are absolutely legitimate. It's not a huge sample. It's 12 games. We're not even 10% into the season. But what the Royals are doing is an unmistakable winning formula throughout time in baseball. Now that the bullpen has turned it around for the better part of a week and just been exceptional, where's the weakness on this team? Honest to goodness, what is the weakness? They hit home runs. They score. Everybody up and down the lineup at some point contributes. They're above average defensively. The starting pitching's outstanding. And now all of a sudden the bullpen is good? This is the Houston Astros. They've been the benchmark in baseball for years in the American League. For years, this is the team to beat. And the Royals are beating them like a drum. What an unbelievable turnaround after those first few games where the Royals looked hapless trying to close out close games, and now they just put people away. So much fun to watch. We're going to have a great baseball discussion today with a man who I think is just one of the most interesting people I've ever met. Jamie Bluma is a former Royal, a Wichita State Hall of Famer. He pitched in three straight College World Series in his college career and is just a remarkable person in so many things that he does, from his commitment to Folds of Honor, military charities, commitment to the College Baseball Hall of Fame here in Kansas City, and his fiance, who's a competitive kayaker that recently completed, get this, a 1,000-mile kayak trek inside the Arctic Circle. I mean, this is really cool. Jamie Bluma and his fiance got it going on. Jamie's with us today. She's not. But this is it's going to be a lot of fun. It is always great to talk with Jamie Bluma about so many things, including the coaching he does with kids, his commitment to youngsters. We'll get into it a little bit about injuries in Major League Baseball, why today's pitchers seem to get more arm injuries than pitchers in the past, and so many other topics. It's brought to you by Back 9 Development, online at back9development.com. Kansas City's custom home builder. They've got only 8 lots left in Lansing at the Dunes. They're over 3-acre lots. Perfect place to custom build if you want to get out of the city, get someplace conservative, get someplace where you got some space. They've even got a pond and a lake around there at the Dunes in Lansing. Also, the lofts, condominiums in Manhattan are available. Check it all out, back9development.com. MyPillow.com is having a $25 extravaganza sale. Multiple items. I mean a lot of items at MyPillow.com. Right now, just $25. Log on to MyPillow.com/KKHI or call 800-923-9034. These are the lowest prices of the year, even including the Giza fabric MyPillow Premium, just $25 right now at MyPillow.com. And our friends over at TimeWise Media. Yeah, TimeWise Media can help your business do more. TimeWiseMedia.com. Whether you're looking for pay-per-click, social media, keyword, or site retargeting, web development, Google Business Profile, you name it, print, billboards, traditional media, TimeWise Media can help you reach more customers for your business. Call Chris Benson at 913-702-2722 or log on to TimeWiseMedia.com. This is going to be fun. He's my buddy, he's interesting, and we're talking baseball with Jamie Bluma on KKHI. Hit it!
The Kevin Keatsman Has Issues conversation is brought to you by Finch Knife Company, online at finchknifeco.com.
Well, we got Jamie Bluma here. Jamie, it is great to see you. Thanks for coming by the Western Annex studio of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Great to see you in person, my friend.
Good to see you as well, man. It's been a minute. And remember, our last one was fantastic, so yeah. I'm looking forward to another one as well.
And you've got an upcoming wedding. You're getting married. Congratulations.
We do, yeah. Emily, and if you know anything about me, we've been dating for quite some time. We've been engaged for 5 years, and we always have some. We're the busiest people that I know that don't have any children. Between her kayaking and all the things that I'm doing. So finally, this past fall, she was like, it's time.
It's time? I said, okay. She told you, huh?
I had been laughing. I said, well, you pick the month, I pick the year. That's what I've been laughing about for a couple. And I did try to talk her into having Bloomapalooza be the reception for a couple of years. That way I didn't have to pay for alcohol, but that obviously fell on deaf ears. She's like, our wedding is not a fundraiser, sweetheart.
Is she still competing competitively in the kayak?
She is. So she'll do the one that she's done the most times is the MR340, the one that runs from here to St. Louis on the Missouri River. She did not do it last year because last we spoke, she had done the MR whatever year and won it as a mixed tandem. Last year, she got an opportunity to do a race called the Yukon 1000. So she did 1,000 miles from Yukon territory north of White Horse, Yukon territory to 3 hours north of Fairbanks on the Yukon River. So 1,000 miles, limited. You don't have anybody help you. Like, I can't do grounds crew or anything like that. So her and her partner, Dan Voss, they had a tandem kayak, and they brought everything with them. Water filtration system, food, dehydrated. They had a spot tracker and a satellite phone in case of emergency. I think there were 27 original teams with the opportunity to do it. Only 18 started, two-person teams, and only 15 finished from all over the world.
Wow.
Two gals from Estonia that are like Olympic-style athletes ended up finishing first. I mean, there's no gold, silver, bronze. But her and Dan finished in 7 days, 7 hours.
I was going to say, how long does something like that take?
You have to be done in 10. They finished in 7 days, 7 hours. A lot of that middle part of the pack. But it was all about finishing. And so it was gut-wrenching for me. And I did stuff on Facebook Live where I'm trying to act like I know what I'm talking about. All I know is I'm following a tracker on my phone. And I want every morning. So the rule was 18 hours on the water, 6 hours off. Just for... It's always light all the time. You're literally north of the Arctic Circle. So, I mean, that was the whole thing. So you got to figure out where to sleep without a bear, you know, check for bear poop and all that stuff and you know, camp out and do all that and then get up and go do 18 hours again. So they did that 7 days. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
How do they keep, like, supplies and food and stuff locked up to make sure the bears aren't coming after them?
You hang it up.
And a tree?
So what they normally did was they would cook in the morning and not cook at night. And so you don't want to go to bed with that smell around. So there was, you know, there was smart things to do to not attract bears. And when you have dehydrated food, it doesn't really smell like anything until you rehydrate it.
Yeah.
So they weren't keeping anything in their campsite overnight. You know, I think they had a moose wander through their campsite at one point.
Those things are huge.
Yeah, giant.
Is there money in this? Do you win?
There's no money. No, it actually costs you money. Yeah, they've been doing this one for a while. I mean,
that's not a hobby. That's a passion. That's a lifestyle. That's a way
thing.
Of life.
It's a thing. So I think they've talked about there's going to be a 2,000-mile Yukon where they go all the way to the Bering Sea. Now, she has no desire to do that. This was, you know, 7 days, a challenge in and of itself. She got the opportunity. She may do it some other time, maybe with a female partner or something like that. But it was one of those things that because Dan had gotten kind of a golden ticket because he had done what's called the Yukon Quest, which is half of it, they got themselves a spot. So not a lot of people get an opportunity to do it, so she wasn't going to pass it up.
You gotta be really proud.
Awesome, man. Unbelievable. And you know, just to be there at the finish line and just the, you know, the emotion involved. She's got a pretty crazy picture, you know, posted of the hug,
right?
You know, when the race is over and all that stuff. So
one of your real passions is military charities and supporting troops and veterans and all kinds of great folks. And you dedicate a lot of time to that. Obviously, you coach kids and stuff as well. Sure. We'll get into that in a moment. But how much of a passion is that for you? You've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, I believe
you've been doing this since before it was cool.
Well, I mean, I've been doing it when I realized that I had an opportunity and an ability to do it. I mean, one of the things about playing Major League Baseball is everybody assumes you made millions of dollars. And, you know, back 20 years ago when I signed, everybody wasn't signing I wasn't a first-round draft pick. I was a senior signed, blah, 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 blah. I didn't make a ton of money playing baseball. It's given me an unbelievable career and a platform. And I started to realize that probably a dozen years ago or more. Like, man, I think there's some more stuff that I can do. My dad is a flew an F-4 in Vietnam. He's a Vietnam vet, still living. And I kind of used his platform, and it kind of was a spinoff. That the thing that helped me first was Folds of Honor that everybody's aware of now. That's my hometown. So Owosso, Oklahoma, Dan Rooney, there was just such a connection to that, and a lot of people were aware of that. That's kind of how it all got started. I had met a couple local country music singers. I met Joe Efforts that was running Stonegate Motor Plat. So we just put a whole bunch of pieces together. I like listening to music. I like having a beer, too. I like doing silent auctions and raffles and stuff. Well, why can't we just put all these things together and try to raise some money for some good people that need it?
You sound just like a Kevin Keatsman Has Issues podcast listener. That's what you sound like.
Well, go perfect.
Like to have a beer, too. Love a military charity. Love helping out and helping others. That's it, man. That's
so
us.
It's been super fun. So last year was our 10th anniversary. We've done Bloomapalooza, and we raised over $600,000. And it's morphed. It used to just go to Folds of Honor that first year, and now it goes to Warriors Ascent. It goes to Veterans Community Project here in Kansas City, which has gone a little bit more across the country. It's gone to and a whole bunch of other Kansas City charities. So we started with just military, and it's just kind of morphed into, man, what charity? Live Like Luke. There's so many other great charities here in town. Children's Mercy, that's been able to benefit. And I like playing golf, too. So that's one of those things is like, hey, instead of just giving somebody a check and taking it to them, hey, let's play in a golf tournament. Then I can kind of talk to you about what Red, White, and Bluma does and how we can get you involved in this. And so, you know, scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, help. So that's been fun. Keeps me on the golf course, keeps me involved in the community and all that for the last 10 years. So that's gotten to be a really good passion.
Youth baseball is a big thing with you, and you were a great, great college player and minor leaguer, and I think you were on your way to being a great major leaguer, and injury cut that very short. And we've talked about that through the years, and I know that's not a subject I really want to talk about today, but you're in the Wichita State Hall of Fame, and many of your teammates and your coach are in the College Baseball Hall of Fame that we recently saw Alex Gordon promoting here in Kansas City. That's a really cool thing, the College Baseball Hall of Fame, and you've got some great teammates in there. I'm not an expert enough to know. I know you were a great college player. Like, you didn't give up a postseason run, and you went to the College World Series 3 years in a row. Nobody scored off Jamie Bluma when he was at Wichita State. That's what I know. So, what do you think of the College Baseball Hall of Fame?
It's a really cool process. I mean, I don't know. A whole lot of people don't know. We kind of started down this road in November of 2022. Eric Olson and Warren Wilkinson with Visit Overland Park, Visit OP, put a group together. They had something come across their plate that there was an opportunity to get the College Baseball Hall of Fame. It wasn't physically anywhere, believe it or not. It wasn't in Omaha. There had been some attempts to build a brick and mortar in Lubbock, Texas back in the early 2000s. And they had put a committee together. So there was a College Baseball Hall of Fame committee. There was just no brick and mortar. And so for the last, I mean, that's been 18, 20 years, I think that group has actively been trying to figure out where. I was surprised to hear that Omaha, when they tore down Rosenblatt Stadium, which is where I played in the College World Series and for the Omaha Royals, that they had not dedicated a part of that new ballpark or thought toward phase something.
To do it there.
And they didn't. So that being said, I remember getting put on this committee and getting an opportunity to be on this committee with Alex Gordon, with Ryan Stanek, with, you know, some people from Blue Valley Recreation Complex, with Fred Merrill that is big in Prairie Fire. So the goal was to try to get the College Baseball Hall of Fame to put into the Prairie Fire Museum. And that's where it is going to go. And fast forward 16 months. 14 months, however many months that is, we were able to announce in January that we are actually getting the College Baseball Hall of Fame. It will be physically in the Prairie Fire Museum. Hopefully, ballpark, I think we're going to try to shoot to open second half of 2025.
Okay.
I know there's a capital campaign going on, so if you want to go to collegebaseballhallofame.org, check it out. And the cool thing about the whole committee was, myself, having played at Wichita State, I mean, Joe Carter is in there. Gene Stevenson, my coach, is in there. Phil Stevenson, his brother. Darren Dreyford, who was one of my teammates. A ton of guys already. You brought it up earlier. Well, you get in there. I said, man, I doubt it. It would be very flattering if I did. And I know I had a good college career, but that's a whole different level. And I don't know if there's relievers, but
do you think major league careers factor whether or not you're in the College Baseball Hall of Fame? Because I hate when that happens.
And I don't think so at all. You know, that a couple of the people that just got inducted were Pat Casey and Alex Gordon and Ron Darling. And if you go back and look what Ron Darling did at Yale, it was a pretty cool thing. I mean, and what was cool about him getting in this year was there were 40 of his teammates from Yale there.
Oh, wow.
For the induction. So it was like a frat party, and they all had the Yale sweaters on and that kind of thing. And I think they wanted to stand alone. This is collegiate only. I mean, this is not because you had a great, you know, pro career. And that was the cool thing about having Alex Gordon on our committee was that he lives here, and we ended up getting it here. And then he was in this year's induction class. Mm-hmm. So for all those things, it was pretty neat. And
here's a name for you. How was Whit Merrifield? Wasn't he a great college player?
He was.
South Carolina, they won a national championship, the College
South
World
Carolina,
Series.
South Carolina,
was
correct.
He a great college player that became a major leaguer, or was he a really good college player?
He was a really good college player.
So
I don't know if he was player of the year.
Right.
You know, the Brooks Kieschnicks, if you go back my college years, and the Darren Dreiferts that were two-way guys and the best of the best of the best, you know, those guys. So, I mean, it's a small list, to be honest with you, because there's a whole lot more people playing college baseball than there are playing Major League baseball.
Right.
I mean, you got to think about it like that. And it's not just Division I level. This is all levels of collegiate baseball. NAIA, junior college, D2, D3.
As it should be.
That's a lot of baseball. I mean, that's a lot of different. And so this year at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, a lot of people were like, well, I've never heard of that guy. But my God, look what they did. You know, and everybody in their own right. And that just tells you the amount of people that are playing to be able to get to that level. I mean, I would be super flattered, but I don't see that in the cards. But it's been an awesome thing just to be a part of it, to know how many people are involved. And the irony of one situation is my college coach, Gene Stevenson, in the Hall of Fame, his now wife is Jana Hauser, Dick Hauser's daughter. Well, Jana's been on the committee and off the committee and now back on the committee for the College Baseball Hall of Fame again. So just the tie-ins and just to be able to, you know, to be in the inner workings of it and all that stuff. And we just have so much to offer here in Kansas City. And one of the things that we really want to do moving forward is with all the different baseball complexes we have all over the city and how many tournaments we have going on to create a way to go to the Negro Leagues Museum in addition to the College Baseball Hall of Fame, in addition to, you know, a Monarchs game or a T-Bones game or, you know, the college basketball experience. We're creating a you know, some way to get all of those things involved, you know, when a family's here from out of town and they got a whole weekend to do stuff. So there's a infinite amount of possibilities what we can do moving forward.
All right, let's talk about coaching kids at home field and what it is exactly that you do and why you do it, because you're a smart guy. You know everybody in town. You could do a million different things and probably make a pile of money if you ever wanted to just go do that. But you love this game. Baseball has become basically your career path, your life. Why youngsters, and what are the age groups, and what are you teaching these kids today? And has it changed from 20 years ago working with kids? Are they changing?
It's always changing. I mean, that's one thing you got to realize. The game has changed exponentially from when I was, you know, a young kid going through it versus, you know, young kids now. There's just so much more specificity. I mean, we can start doing – we'll talk about injuries here in a second, and we'll kind of tie it into this, but – I think it gets to be just a little bit too much too soon with all of our different sports, not just baseball, but I think people try to maybe get too specific too young. Man, I want kids to be athletes, men, women, whoever. Go play as many different sports as you can. Go try as many different things as you can, because that's the kind of athletes that you see later on end up succeeding at the higher levels. But at the same time, I want kids to have a good experience in what they're doing. And that's what has meant the world to me over the last – I mean, this I think will be my 24th year teaching, not – having playing, is when I see a kid at Tanner's or wherever I'm out having a beer or something, and I say, hey, coach, what's going on? Knowing that they did not go play college baseball, knowing that they may or may not have made their high school team, but now I know that they had a good experience playing baseball.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully they learned some life lessons and 100%. Some things about, you know, being a team player once you get into the business world, because the reality of it is that 99.9% of you guys, of all these kids that we teach, aren't going pro. I mean, we've been lucky around this town, and it's getting better that we do have some guys in the big leagues. We got John Means. We got Ryan Stanek are now getting to be the older guys, which is crazy. Now you got Jason Adams been around a while, and now you got the Riley Pints and the Wentzes and so many guys from this area, because there are so many people doing what I'm doing. We've just ramped it up to a degree where everybody can get a lot of really position-specific training.
Is there an age or a physical development size that it's okay to start spinning the ball? If you're working with a young boy to pitch, at what age should they just be throwing it? And then at what age do you say, okay, let's start trying to develop breaking balls?
One of my things for the last 15 years, and I'm an old goat now, and I feel like I'm getting older with all the things are, is I'm like, until you can start shaving, you wait on throwing a breaking ball.
Okay.
You know, just because kids aren't dumb.
But do coaches do that? Because a lot of the coaches are somebody's dad, and they may be the pitcher's dad, and they want to. Isn't the temptation for almost all the youth coaches to start too early for that because they want to win games?
Agreed. And I tell you what sometimes is hard for me to watch is a Little League World Series, because you got kids too young, not necessarily throwing curveballs correctly. I mean, there's one way to throw it correctly, and I listen to Mike Boddicker all the time, and we have talked about this for years. Kids just see what kids can't hit, and so that's what they want to throw, and I completely get that, but at the same time, you have to have a talk with them like, hey, let's trust your other stuff, have the ability to throw strikes, a two-seamer and a four-seamer and a changeup, and if you're getting people out doing that, we've got another option coming down the pike here in a little while right. That we can talk about a couple different kinds of breaking balls. So let's develop your other pitches first to try to delay having arm problems, because it feels like now if you pitch long enough, you are going to hurt your arm. I don't think there's one person that I can go pluck out of the stands, whether you pitched for 15 years in the big leagues or whether you pitched until you were in college, that didn't get hurt at some point, whether that's elbow or shoulder, or it's just an unnatural motion. We can be as good as we can be as instructors. That is no guarantee that you are not going to get hurt. We want you to try to use the rest of your body to help prevent that, but there's no trick.
One of the big talking points of spring training this year was Royals pitching staff developing this sweeper. And as I understand it, it entails taking your index finger, putting your fingernail on the ball, and using your outside three fingers and taking what is essentially a slider and turning it into something that sweeps a little more than drops straight down. And every time I try to, I don't have a ball here, but every time I try to emulate that, I feel these muscles in my forearm just tense up because I've got three fingers out and one back with my fingernail on the ball and my thumb going around it. And I can feel this in my arm, and that's not anything I do. I dug a bunch of holes in the yard last week to plant some stuff, and I used muscles that I haven't used in a while. Not those. The ones I'm right here, I'm like, I don't know when I've ever felt or used those. Are they developing pitches, even at the big league level, that are so unnatural that it's leading to injuries? Why do you think pitchers are getting hurt more?
I think it's a culmination of a whole bunch of that, that being one of them. I mean, we've created like almost designer breaking balls now because we can go look at high-speed film. We can go look at spin rates. We can catch it out. I mean, I would have loved to figure out how to throw a different breaking ball.
Right.
Like, I only knew what I was taught. Here's a curveball. Here's a slider. Everything's going to fall somewhere in between.
Did you ever put a fingernail on the ball?
No, I have small hands. Well, I can do it now because I'm missing half of a finger. So that's another whole
that's
funny story. It's another podcast. But I throw that one now, and you know, it's knuckle curve because I use my fingernail more than I use, you know. And so that's the allure, I think, for me as an older guy, like, man, I wished I could have figured out something new. Well, that's got to be the allure of every kid pitching now that has the access to these things, is we can almost design our own breaking ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? For every different arm slot, arm angle, spin rate, and how it comes out of your hand, I mean, every kid is different. And I think we are creating, for me, it's more too much maximum effort too young. I would rather kids, when they're younger, in the age that I have them a lot of times.
Work on location.
Man, let's work on throwing strikes and do things, because then you have that basis of being able to throw strikes, and then we can add the velocity aspect to it later as we start getting bigger and stronger and our bodies can handle it, instead of, man, we're so worried about throwing hard so young, now we don't have the ability to throw a strike. Boy, and to try to go that way, I mean, the cart's out of the barn.
I mean,
to be able to go backwards and try to figure out how to throw strikes.
I'm watching that what they're teaching and hitting now. I'm wondering what kind of hitter I would have been when I played. We had a pretty good high school team, and I hit for a good average. We were taught to either swing level or swing down on the ball. Put it in play, don't strike out. No matter what, let it hit you if it's inside.
Right.
Work the count, get a walk, just get on base.
Try to hit the pitcher or hit the ball the other way.
Keep the thing moving. Yeah. Don't make. Yeah. Here's what they literally taught us, and the Royals have had some really bad teams, and I'm like, I would love to teach them this at some point, but they just don't do this to major leagues. You got one goal. You're going to the plate. Don't make an out.
Right.
That's it. I don't care what happens. Just don't make an out. You know, I'm watching games on the line in the eighth and ninth inning and a ball coming at a thigh and guys getting out of the way with two guys on and one out. I'm like, let it hit you.
Let it hit you.
In the eighth inning, let it hit you. Okay. Right. I understand first inning, you're up there wanting to get your hacks and you're hitting for a living. I get that. But they just, they you know who does? The Twins. The Twins will stand there and get plunked all day.
No.
They did that in the opening series. But
well, that's got to be a system-wide thing. You know, that's one of those things. That starts at the lower minor league level and it works its way all the way through.
But that's what they taught us. And now they're like, get the ball up, hit it in the air, get it up in the air and get it over the fence. And that means you strike out a whole bunch more. And that's not a bad thing. Is it not a bad thing there's so many strikeouts in baseball?
I think they've done the analytics of, okay, we can live with the strikeouts
if we hit it up long term.
Well, and that's gonna create, at the end of the day, that's gonna create more runs on average, maybe by a tenth of a point, a tenth of a run. I'm not smart enough. But I know what won us the World Series in 2014 and 15 was
making out.
Keep the ball rolling, yeah, man. Right. Keep the line moving or whatever it was where we do a good job. The shift is over. Yeah. Hey, man, I can't believe more people didn't try to hit the ball the other way when the shift was in place. Yeah. Like, your goal as a player is to stay in the big leagues. I don't care what else anybody else is trying to teach. If I see everybody on the right side of the infield, I'm going to try to hit it to the left side of the infield.
I'll learn how to bunt, man.
So yeah, I read a great article this morning just about John Smoltz, and Smoltz is so glad that he pitched when he did. He said, because I threw 100 at one point in my career, and I wouldn't want to pitch now, and that's the only thing I was worried about.
Yeah.
He's like, I learned how to manipulate the ball and have a whole bunch of different pitches and all that stuff. So the interesting thing for me is the fight between the Players Association and the other guys is we don't have enough data to know, is pitch clock hurting us? I don't know.
I love the pitch clock.
This, so do I. We had it in college. I've talked about this in the past. We did it 25 years ago.
It made the game so much better.
100%. I don't know. We don't have enough data. We've only had the pitch clock for a year and 10 games, at the major league level. So that remains to be seen. But I do understand when we're maximum effort more often, quicker, and we don't have a body to recover, that makes sense to me. Sure, that's going to create us having kids throw too hard, too much, too soon. That's been on the up and up for 15 years.
I didn't think at any point this year I would have a Royals meltdown because I didn't think they were going to be good enough for me to get upset and have a meltdown. But I watched them play the first week and I went, oh my God, look at the starting pitching. And I'm watching Bobby Witt and Salvi at that point and MJ Melendez. I'm like, they got hitters in the lineup. And then they had that last game in Baltimore and I was losing my mind over Will Smith being the closer. And I literally a week ago just gave up on the bullpen. I said, okay, the Royals are going to be fun. They're not going away. They're going to have a lot of leads. The starting pitching's good and they got real hitters in the lineup and real players on the field. It's a good baseball team.
Yes.
It is a good baseball team. I said, this bullpen looks so bad to me. They're going to break your heart and lose a whole bunch of games late. And I'm sick over this. I don't think they've given up a run since I melted down. It's been like almost 16 innings now since the Royals bullpen gave up a run. Do they have what it takes to have, I don't expect them to have a top 10 bullpen. My God, if they're 15th or 20th in Major League Baseball, with the other parts that they have, they're going to get us to September. Do they have enough talent there, or is this 15 or 16 anything a fluke?
This part of it's maybe a little bit of a fluke, but that's how baseball is. I wish I would have called you. I was sitting in my garage having a cigar, listening to the end of that game against the Orioles, knowing that I don't even know if Will Smith wanted to be the closer, but Will Smith has the most experience on this club, and he's got 3 World Series rings in 3 years. So guess what, kid? You're the closer. So I knew that may be something that's going to change at some point, and what a difference a week makes when they had given up. I remember the stat, because I talked about it the other day, was starting pitchers had given up 6 runs in 37 innings, and the bullpen had given up 14 runs in 15 innings, and we're 2-4. Like, crap.
You're right.
And then last weekend, this past week happened with the White Sox. And
better.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say. I like the guys that we have down there. We have some guys that have more experience than anybody realizes. They're not young guys, but they're not super old guys. A guy like Schreiber, who's a little bit different, kind of a funky arm angle guy. You got, who else is in there?
Schreiber hasn't given up a run. He's been terrific. I know. I had to say it, right? So he's got a 3.44 career earned run average over 5 teams. He's played elsewhere, Detroit and Boston. But MacArthur's the interesting one. A couple of nights ago, he pitched 2 innings and got the win. He's 1-0 with 2 saves now. And it looks like they're going to give him the shot to be the closer at this point. He's only 27, hasn't played elsewhere. He got drafted, I think, by the Phillies, was in the minors. The Royals had a minor league trade. They brought him up last year, and he's here. 27 should be kind of right in the prime if that's what he's turning. But this really is sort of his big league debut. He pitched in a few games last year for the Royals. But it looks like maybe they want MacArthur to be the closer. We're just going to have tryouts. We're okay with this.
So one thing that I know doesn't work long term, and we've kind of seen it, is closer by committee. You know, over the long haul, somebody needs to fall into a role at some point. Now, it's still early, but I think guys are going to start figuring out where they fit. Nick Anderson's a stud when he's healthy and everything's good, man. His numbers are really good, and he'll go through stretches where he'll get it done. Zerpa's been great in the pen. He may end up, we're going to need more starters than five. I mean, we're excited right now, and we've had 8 out of 10 starts have been fantastic, but that, you know, that's going to work itself out too. Even last night, man, Cole Hamels.
He might be Cole Hamels.
You know what? Last night was one of those days that he wasn't getting swing and misses, but he battled his ass off and he kept us in the ball game.
Yeah, he did.
You know, and that's what it's all about. And the one thing I like about this, and I got a chance to talk to Michael Wacha a little bit at FanFest, was, you know, he's excited to come over here and compete with some of these guys. And I think you're going to see this throughout the course of the year. That's going to be good for the Brady Singers of the world. And Marsh at the back of our bullpen, you know, at the back of the starting rotation, is we all want to one-up each other and we want to improve on each other's performance. You've seen that in 10 games. You've seen that. As far as bullpen goes, I think these guys have the ability to be, you know, top third, you know, top 10 bullpen, I think.
Well, they're good.
And a lot of this is,
if they do that, I think they'll win the division.
And a lot of this is going to be matchups. And because they've got 4 or 5 different guys, and that's the way this game is now, is, man, we can look at a spreadsheet on how is this guy against this pitch, and here's what this guy has. I mean, there's going to be a lot of matchup things, and maybe you don't really see closers go 2 innings. Or last night, I know it was a tie ball game, and MacArthur ended up getting the win last night. So I think you're going to see a lot of that until guys start settling into their roles. We haven't even really played that good offensively yet.
No, but they've been sort of clutch. There seems to be a guy every night. We've seen Melendez had game-winning hits in 2 or 3 straight games. Bobby Witt Jr. gets big hits. Salvi got a walk-off game winner a couple of nights ago. I mean, it just seems like every night somebody steps up. Like when the Royals were good in 14 and 15, that's kind of what we saw. There was a vibe. There was a feel around the team. They came to the park. It may be my night. It may not be, but it's going to be somebody's night.
If not you, why not me? Let's go.
And that seems to be a little bit of what they're doing.
Yes, and I see another thing, too, that I hear them talking about is how they changed how they sat in the clubhouse. Did you hear this?
No, I did not.
So in the past, a lot of times it's pitchers on one side, hitters on the other side. So what they've done in the locker room this year, I think they've mixed it all up.
Oh, good.
So everybody's pulling for everybody. And I know that may seem like a little bitty thing on paper, or whatever, but man, when you got a whole bunch of people getting along and doing like that, and everybody's pulling for everybody, you know, there's only 7 guys on this team that were on this team's opening day last year.
Well, that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And so to do things a little bit different, and I love JJ Piccolo's carving his own path and getting out of Dayton's shadow, and Q's getting to be Q and going to be able to learn how to manage a bullpen. I mean, I know it's 6-4 or whatever we are at right now, but I'm excited.
I can rattle off 4 of those 7 that I'm glad are here: Brady Singer, Salvador Perez, Bobby Witt, and MJ Melendez. There's 3 others. I don't have them off the top of my head. But those 4, it's a good place to start.
Exactly.
Brady Singer is just flat out nasty. I still think he's got this incredible upside. You tell me about the starting pitching. When you watch these guys pitch, we sort of know what Lugo and Wacha are, and they've been really good so far. Reagans and Singer are the 2 with just massive upside. Who do you think will, if they're all healthy all year, which starting pitcher do you think will have the best year?
Based on just stuff, it should be Reagans, just because his stuff is out of this world. He may have the best left-handed stuff in the major leagues right now, period. Last night,
he did not have it.
He didn't have it. He had the start before that, and he was swing and miss, 95-89 in a nasty breaking ball. I think over the long haul, I'm gonna go with Singer this year because he's got that kind of stuff, and he's kind of gotten off the I don't need to throw a changeup thing, and he's been willing to throw. Now he's throwing another, you know, a cutter or a sweeper and all that stuff. So there's a whole lot of him being around Wacha and Lugo is really going to help him. Same with Marsh. But the thing that I love started in spring training, and I think it was Waka's thing, was strike one. Let's get ahead of guys. That's why those 2 guys are over here, because they are strike throwers, and we want to be aggressive in the zone, and let's go get them. And I think that they've taken that. There's some sort of a competition went on in spring training where they drafted 4 different teams and who was throwing the most strikes. I'd like to get to the ballpark and see who won and what the prize money was and all that, because I think that made a huge difference. Just to create sort of an internal competition like that is amazing what that does within a clubhouse.
Singer does something that a lot of Royals right-handers through the years did, and it's probably across baseball. All the great right-handers against right-handed batters do this. I remember Saberhagen, David Cone, Zach Greinke. There's been a bunch of them. When he throws that fastball, it moves so much, he will start it outside and it will paint that lower corner on the outside of the plate against a right-hander and just freeze him, and he'll get called third strike. So when he's on, he just paints the corner. And then most of the really great right-handers that I remember the Royals having, the Cy Young candidate types, would start that same fastball with all that movement right on the inside corner and just bust them in on the hands, and they just can't hit it. And I, when he is on, it's like watching an artist paint a canvas. I mean, he literally is just painting the corner.
He reminds me a little bit of Greinke in his younger days, yeah. You know, and now he's starting to come into his own a little bit. And if you ever got a chance to really sit down and watch Greg Maddux throw, when he had that sinker where he could start that in on a hip of a left-handed hitter and then end up in the inside corner and they wouldn't move. Same thing about starting it off the plate to a right-hander and popping that. Most guys aren't very good at hitting the ball down and away.
Yeah,
that's why you hear the analytics and all that stuff. We just talked about it earlier about guys don't hit the ball the other way. It's about launch angle and pull it and do all that stuff. So when you're a pitcher and you have the ability now to be able to hit that down and away, righty or lefty, with a two-seamer or a four-seamer or – and that's you're dangerous.
Do you feel bad for hitters these days?
I don't ever feel bad for hitters. I got bred that in college.
I didn't think you did, man. It looks hard. Hitting looks harder every year. These pitchers are amazing. And the stuff they're doing is crazy.
Well, and then that's the thing is when you see a guy with this kind of velocity and they command it, now you got some freaks that are fun to watch, man.
This rotation has a chance to be one of the best in baseball. Now, injuries are a big part of the season, is very long, all those things, but we know what Lugo and Waka are, and Singer looks like he's kind of back to what he was a couple of years ago. And Reagan's, is Reagan's pitched enough for us to just know and decide that he is like literally a number one guy?
He's got number one stuff. He's still got a long way to go, I think, to be the legit number one guy as far as ending losing streaks and being the guy that wants the ball and needs the ball and that kind of thing. He's got a little ways to go to be that, but no doubt it's in there. I mean, the stuff and all that stuff, he's got to pair that with going out and being that guy when you need to be the guy.
What do you see in Matt Cotero as a manager? Do you like what he does game to game? Are there things that you would nitpick and have an issue with that he does consistently? You go, maybe that's not the right way. He seems a little bit hands-off-ish. I don't know, but you tell me. What do you think of him as a manager?
I was a little bit worried last year with, you know, how he handled the bullpen, but when you didn't have anybody to handle, that can be a little bit hard. You're only as good as your players are, and I use the first-year guy here, but I think that's one thing that he's going to have to learn a little bit too. You know, how to handle a bullpen a little bit, because starters don't go seven anymore. Let's be honest. As good as the starting rotation has been, 40% of the innings probably are going to come from the bullpen. So we got to be good at that. And I like the fact that he's kind of hands off. You know, you got some more veteran guys in here. We'll let you guys police the clubhouse. I'll make some moves. What I do like about the pitch clock and all these, man, we have a lot of pieces and parts that we can move around with all the utility guys to make some moves late. And we've been in a lot of one-run games already, and Darian Blanco's been a thing already.
Right.
What a weapon. And he can also play defense a little bit. And so he's going to have his work cut out for him with all the different moves. But I like that the fact that he wants to be that guy to put this guy in at first base and pinch run this guy. And there's a lot of moves to be made those last nine outs to get us some wins.
All right, last thing I want to ask you about, I think is really cool when I see this happen, because it reminds me of college baseball or a different level of baseball than Major League Baseball. For my whole life, I've watched Major League Baseball, and a starting pitcher comes out of the game, and if he's pitched well, you know, everybody high fives. If he's pitched poorly, he goes into the tunnel or goes and sits by himself or whatever. They just get away from him, you know. But we've watched the Royals starters come out of the game after they pitch well, and they don't get their handshakes and go sit all alone at the end of the bench. We're watching the other four starters come up and surround that starter before he even has a chance to sit down. What are they talking about? And are the Royals the only team that does this? Because to me, it says these five guys right now believe they're something special and they're going to do this as a team of five. Now, nobody makes it with five starting pitchers. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be other guys in their rotation. But what's this all about? And does anybody else do it?
I haven't seen a whole lot of it anywhere else. I mean, you get a bunch of new guys together, and you heard the stories about how Waka ended up here, and Waka talked to Lugo about him coming over here. And, you know, I like how that all started off in the offseason. And so we've taken that into spring training, and we've taken that into the season. And these guys are really about
– and now into the dugout.
Supporting each other and figuring out, hey, man, what did you – especially when you're in that same series and you're going to face that – same lineup or same bunch of guys the next day. I think there's that banter back and forth.
Like, while it's fresh, what did you see out there?
Yes. What pitch did you do at this point? Because sometimes it's hard to see what a guy threw from the dugout, to be honest with you. It's a lot easier to see it on a monitor, us sitting at home, to be able to know, okay, man, I got to go face this guy tomorrow. What did you do in that situation? Man, I'm going to really take that and run with it. And hey, and I think a lot of it is, hey, damn it, good job.
Yeah.
You know what, man? Good job. Let's, man, I want to go out there and do better than you did today.
I joked with Jessica last night. They were doing the on-field interview after the game with Salvi. And I remember sitting in meetings when I was at Union Broadcasting with the Royals, and we were trying to get the rights to the game, the radio rights to the games. And I said, look, there's so many things you guys can be doing. We could be doing interviews on the field when the game is over. We can, you know, have a reporter down there. We can do all. And they looked at me like I had a disease. And they're like, what? No, we don't know. Nobody's going to
ask. Nobody does that.
It's like, these are major league players. We don't bother them.
Interview, you know, people while the game is going on?
They got to go in and cool off, and then we'll open the clubhouse open. And they don't call it a clubhouse anymore. Now it's a locker room, finally. The young guys are calling it locker rooms, which I've just been waiting forever to not call it a clubhouse. What I remember about the game so much was so many players that would just be like, I'm here. I do this my way. I'll play my game. You play yours. And I thought it was really a collection of 25 individuals a lot of times. Even the great teams were like that. I don't see that much in baseball anymore. What I see of the younger generation of players is they want to glean something from every teammate they can. They want to try to learn something, steal it, apply it, however you want to describe it. That's healthy for the game, and that's healthy for any player, isn't it?
Well, and I think with the advent of social media and everything, too, that's what you see with these younger kids. I mean, they're used to be able to knowing everything that's going on, where in the past, hey, what happens in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse, you know, and that still does to a lot of degree.
Sure.
But now, social media, everything that everybody does, you know about it.
Yeah.
And the Jackson Holliday's in the big leagues. He's a teenager, just got called up.
Yeah.
And so the new generation is on its way. And so I think a lot of that is we want to know what's going on. We want to know. And I love the respect of the guys that are coming up that are stars, have the history of their fathers. Bobby Witt's like that, man.
Yeah.
His sixth tool is he gets it. You know, he gets how to be a good teammate and all that stuff and understands it and has a passion to play the game. You're going to see the same thing out of Jackson Holliday. His dad played the game hard. His dad played the game right. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, you see a lot of guys whose dad played this game and taught the right way to play the game coming forward. Now there's a lot of other guys coming up that are going to learn a lot from that and seeing those guys like, man, if these guys learned how to do it the right way from their dads, then I should probably be doing it the right way.
I think you're also going to hear Bobby Witt say in about 10 years from now, after he's won a couple of World Series and, you know, done whatever he's done, MVPs and the whole deal, somebody's going to write a feature story. They're going to say, how did you become such a great leader? He goes, man, those two or three first years with Salvador Perez was amazing to watch because he's taken this thing from Salvi. He will be the guy. What I love about Salvador Perez, and I love this about anybody in any sport, when you have that much fun playing the game, I don't know how you fail. I don't know how you fail.
It's not work.
It's not work.
It's not work.
He's out there getting after it.
Still loves going to the ballpark every single day.
He loves playing first base, by the way.
He loves playing baseball.
I know, but at first base.
I see him block.
He literally just gets to stand there and talk to dudes and not call pitches. You know,
he's
like, I'm standing here, pitching your butt, making jokes. Can you imagine the stuff Salvi's saying out there at first base?
I'm not sure everybody at first base loves that Salvi's at first base.
I know. He's just fantastic. Because
half the time he'll say something and be like, what?
Yeah.
Because you know how Salvi is. Yeah, he gets all excited and can't understand him.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that's good.
This seems fun, man.
Yep.
Fill me with sunshine. What do you say? Jamie Bluma, how many wins will the Royals have this year?
Let's
just say a good year, average number of injuries across the board, whatever, because we know it can all change. But if they're relatively healthy, what do you think?
I'm going to say 86 because that puts us in it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to be over 500 and let's start there and all those things and try to get a wild card. But, I mean, it's what you do with those 10 games between 81 wins and 91 wins that whether that gets you into the playoffs or not. And we all know that if you can get into the tournament, even as a wild card, you got a chance.
I was going to say 86 could win the division, but with the White Sox in the division, I don't know. These are going to be some fat records. You know what you don't want to do? You don't want to lose a bunch to the White Sox this year. There's too many ex-Royals there for them to win anything.
That's why I'm so glad we swept them.
I know, right?
Right.
That's
right.
The team you have to take care
of. Yes, sir.
If you'd like to get a hold of Jamie Bluma, he works at home field. He works with all kinds of youngsters, teaching them the finer points of the game with an emphasis on pitching. How do they reach you?
Homefieldkc.com. Email somebody there. I'm on Twitter or X or whatever it's called, at BundyJr19. If you work hard enough, you can get my cell phone number. It's not that hard. My email address, BundyJr19. That's how old I am, at AOL.com.
Homefieldkc.com.
Homefieldkc.com.
Homefieldkc.com. Jamie Bluma, you are the best, buddy. Thanks for all the great work you do with Folds of Honor and all the other charities, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right, that's Jamie Bluma. As you can tell, one of the nicest guys you will ever meet. He is totally committed to wonderful charities in the Kansas City area and around the country. And boy, does he love him some baseball. Always great to catch up with Jamie Bluma. We've known him forever and does a great job. You can also hear him on Sports Radio 810 as a regular contributor on their morning show. Generally a good guy, Jamie Bluma. Our final today is brought to you by Fry Orthodontics, online at fryorthodontics.com with 14 locations in the area. Get your smile for life at Fry Orthodontics, where your individual goal is their individual goal. Teeth love us. You will too. Fryorthodontics.com. Joslyn's Jewelry, the jewelry you'll recommend to your friends and family. Just walk in, mention the podcast, and you are family. There's never a commission. The prices are low, and this is the only place, seriously, the only place ever to consider jewelry repair, because their prices are low, their work is outstanding, and their honesty level is 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch. And Buck Disposal, whether you're a homeowner doing some remodeling, whether your business does projects, work sites, wherever, and you need large containers, BuckDisposal.com would love to provide better service for you than you've ever had with any of these big corporations. You can call Buck Disposal at 913-242-7695. Online at BuckDisposal.com, one of those great Buck roofing companies. Our final is great news. Jeffrey, the intrepid goat that captured our hearts with his daring bridge escape in Kansas City, has officially embarked on the next chapter of his adventure. You remember this story. We did it a couple of days ago. Jeffrey's real name is Chug. This is the goat that was on that bridge at 63rd Street in Kansas City, Missouri, near the zoo. Well, here we go. He's got quite a backstory, according to KC Pet Project. His original family lovingly raised him on the farm an hour and a half away from Kansas City. Wait, they've been searching high and low for Chug since February. Imagine their sheer delight when they spotted their long-lost friend perched precariously on that bridge. With hearts pounding and joy overflowing, they reached out to KC Pet Project, and today their patience and perseverance have paid off in the sweetest possible way. KC Pet Project is thrilled to announce that Chug is now en route to his rightful home, reunited at last with his people family and his original goat family. Let's raise a glass or a bale of hay to the heartwarming reunion and wish Chug a fun-filled and healthy future with endless adventures with his home, with his people. That is great stuff. It became a national story. They're like, look, the goat's on a bridge in Kansas City. And of course, everybody makes a joke and says, that's Patrick Mahomes, the goat. No, it's Chug that they had renamed Jeffrey, and he's going back to his farm 90 minutes from Kansas City. He worked all his way here. And how about this? I think the amazing part of the story was, however he got where he is, he was right by the zoo where all the other animals are. This has to be a book or a movie. This has to be something. You know, an hour and a half away is what, 90 miles? 90 miles over 2 months, and he winds up next to the Kansas City Zoo? This, folks, is a kid's movie. This is a great kid's movie with a happy ending. I'm telling you. Chug, the goat, has been returned. Thanks, as always, for listening to KKHI. Don't forget to follow us on X or Facebook. Go to the KK list for all of our sponsors. And tell your friends to hit that like or follow button. We appreciate you listening every day at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Kevin Keatsman Has Issues has been presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet GMC and is produced by Crooked Tail Media. Please hit the like or follow button wherever you listen or give us a review. For premium content, podcasts, and weekly newsletter, join as a patron at kkhasissues.com for as little as $5 a month. Support all our sponsors and other conservative businesses at thekklist.com.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media, Incorporated.